This episode is brought to you by Rockstar Energy Drink. Be honest, are you procrastinating by listening to this podcast? It's okay. You just need Rockstar Focus. Choose from three delicious flavors, each crafted with ingredients for an ideal energy and mental boost, like Lion's Mane, 200 milligrams of caffeine, and zero sugar. Visit rockstarenergy.com to learn more. At least 75 milligrams of caffeine has been shown to help improve attention.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Welcome to the Who Are You Wearing podcast, a podcast about clothes and style with me, Kiri Pritchard-McLean, a comedian and fan of very stylish people. I love talking to folk about their wardrobes, and this podcast is just an excuse to do it, to be honest. You're listening to episode 9 of series 3. It is with architect, presenter and style queen, Laura Jane Clark. We talk about the many different styles that she has toyed with, and so many of them come from musical influences, which I absolutely love. I think Prince might be my favourite on the list, to be honest. And we cover an awful lot in this episode. Boiler suits, cultural appropriation, expect some nervous stuttering from me on that subject, and body dysmorphia. This episode is a biggie. Laura Jane Clark is gorgeous. She is stylish. But this episode is a very open chat about body issues. I feel like I have to flag it because prior to the episode and afterwards, we chatted about Laura Jane having body dysmorphia. She's very open about it and her sort of mental struggles with her weight, her acne. She talks about, you know, feeling very masculine, even, you know, feeling not at home in her own hair. What I want to flag is, to the outside eye, Laura is absolute tens across the board, such a babe. And during this chat, I don't correct her on her assertions about her appearance or how often she used to feel in her own body, because I just didn't feel like it was the right thing to do. Because I know from my own personal experience, sometimes I'll kind of assert something I feel about my appearance and people will jump in and feel the need to correct me. And actually me just sort of saying something out loud is me wanting to be heard or listened to. So I was trying to balance that. But I want you to know, because you'll be sat there listening, especially if you know Laura already, I'm thinking, what are you on about? You're absolutely gorgeous. And sometimes, you know, I am talking to the body dysmorphia in the interview. So yeah, I'm aware that it is kind of jarring that you've got this incredible, bright, brilliant, gorgeous woman talking about herself in a disparaging way. I just wanted to flag, I know it happens, but I also think the chat was really valuable and it was worth letting her have the space to do that. This episode was recorded in February of 2023. She was at home in Scotland and I was sat on the floor of my mate's back bedroom in Manchester. Thank you, Kath. Gosh, this is such a big open conversation. There's a real rawness to it and I'm really glad that we had it. Please get ready for a very intimate chat as I ask Laura Jane Clark, who are you wearing?
I've got a kind of a funny relationship with clothes, like a lot of people do. I always remember loving them and being, my mum used to make a lot of stuff. So we had a lot of cloth kit stuff. So I remember having this amazing animal cloth kit jacket that had little pockets in with little animals in it, little stuffed animals in each one. It was the cutest thing in the world. And I adored it. So that was probably like 6 or 7. And I literally wore it all the time to bed, everything. Absolutely adored it. And I think my mum was massively into fashion, so she was she did, you know, like courses in fashion, you know those old fashioned kind of, you know, so she was into fashion, and she had all those books, Colour Me Beautiful. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
And I was like, watermelon is my colour. And it was, and my dad's really into, into mum's clothes and like really kind of pro women and like, you know, loves fashion. And but I think when I got a little bit older and getting to that kind of rebellious stage, trying to find my own personality, it kind of shifted slightly. So I think my parents are so conscious of me not looking scruffy that it became a really big issue. So I was like massively into Nirvana and Metallica and all, you know, like proper kind of rocky goth, like before I found Prince, and then it kind of ran alongside. And I, you know, I wanted to wear DM boots, and I wanted to put like Tippex on them, and all, you know, just like be fabulously just. And there was, you know, really kind of, my parents really railed against it, and I just wasn't allowed to do it. And I remember kind of being bought, you know, going out with me, mum and dad, and being bought kind of quite older clothes. So when I was kind of like 11, 12, being taken to M&S and being, you know, wearing size kind of 10 or 12. And then as I got older, kind of wearing bigger clothes than fitted me, kind of thing. Because, you know, my mum was petrified that I looked, anything was too tight or looked too tarty. So I had this like real kind of conflict with wearing clothes, and I always just felt like big and the kind of issues with my face. I had really bad acne, and it goes quite dark quite quickly, and kind of trying to find your way out of that, and kind of dealing with, you know, feeling desperately unattractive. And I always felt like really masculine, and I think, like I said, I had quite big spots, and I used to eat lots of crisps, and so I'd look in the mirror and just always felt awful. And then I found eyeliner, and I was like, hurrah! And then I literally have worn winged eyeliner since I was like 13, and experimented with maybe a shade of brown and a shade of black, and that's about it. You know, that's all I've ever done.
With a lot of people, when I talk to them on this, that they feel like clothes were their way of like finding themselves, but it feels like for a lot of your childhood and teens then, that was, it was the thing that was stopping you from being yourself. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say that's definitely fair, because I had, and you know what it was like growing up in the 90s, and it was all like waif kind of super, you know, and I was never that. So you kind of have this aspiration of all these kind of, oh, I want to be this kind of cool, like blah, 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 and just not fitting in anywhere with that, and kind of not having the same input from my parents that I used to do, or not having that same kind of freedom to wear what I wanted. And I just always felt awkward. I just always felt kind of, and I used to wear those kind of rib tops and satin skirts with DM boots. I lived in DM boots, and there's just like this weird kind of smell you get from those kind of rib tops. I just always felt like, oh, and my face was bad. I used to have really bad spots. I spent hours putting concealer stick on. And, you know, the winged eyeliner was brilliant because it like suddenly draws attention away from the rest of your spots. And I remember being in school and, you know, like covering my face with my hair, and my hair was massive, and they didn't have straighteners in those days. This sounds awful. This is like a real, you know, but I never was like, yes, I feel amazing. That happened in university. But I really struggled to find, you know, I was massively into music, and that's where my personality was, and that's where my kind of creativity and like came from. That was my output. That was my like, this is me. I had posters all over my wall. I had music everywhere. I was like, you know, used to go to the Cavern Market in Rail and swap records for different records. You know, it was like, it was all about music. And then clothes were just like,
Can I ask then, did you, as a kid, did you have an idea of what you wanted to look like and you just weren't it? Or did you have like the taste that you have now and the eye that you have now? Did you always have that? You just couldn't realise it because of your situation? Or was it that you actually didn't know really what you wanted to say about yourself with your clothes?
I don't think I really knew. I think I wanted to be Kurt Cobain. And I think that was the problem. Sure. And I think I didn't really get into the clothes that I wear now until I was a lot older and I started doing burlesque. So I got massively into burlesque. And I was also quite boyish. So as a kid, I was quite tomboyish. I started kickboxing when I was like 14, 15, and that's continued on to now. So I used to do Duke of Edinburgh. I always used to do it with the guys. So I was always quite boyish. I knew I wanted to be this kind of glamorous, moody, Kurt Cobain-y kind of thing. Never wanted to be Courtney Love, just Kurt Cobain. But like, it just didn't. Nothing I did like express that. I couldn't find anything to express that, and anything that I did find I wasn't allowed to wear. So I wasn't allowed to shop in real market or anything. And then as I got a wee bit older and went to Chester and Liverpool and stuff, then I started finding clothes that I kind of really liked. I remember finding these like satin flares, bright red satin flares, and they were kind of like Czech matte and shiny, and I was like, these are amazing. It was so bad. And so I kind of had the, and as I got older, you know, I kind of wore a lot of and moved out, I started wearing a lot of kind of 60s dresses and things, and kind of really, really short stuff, like obscenely short. Loved it. Started wearing wigs and boots and things, like trying to find myself in style, you know what I mean? And I suppose, again, it was all about the music that I was listening to, weirdly. So I was kind of really into 60s and 70s, well, you know, like 70s. What I was listening to was reflected in my clothes, and I think that's the first time I've ever really thought of it in that way.
Like, we grew up in a similar areas, in you're in Thrill and I'm on the island and it's Morn, and I remember when you're into music, like, if it's anything like me going to school in Bangor, there's like a very small group of kids who are obsessed with music and are in the record stores all the time. And your way of finding those other kids when you went to different places, like I did know, or, you know, you'd play another school in some tournament or whatever, was what you wore. And it was a really quick shorthand of like, have you got the right band t-shirt? Are you wearing the right DMs or Vans or whatever? And it's when you live in the countryside and you just, there's kind of a dominant cultural force which is very mainstream, and you're in that little sliver of alternative, and often there's like half a dozen of you, it's another way of sort of trying to find your people a bit quicker. Were you doing it like that as well?
Yeah, I think so. And the guys that I used to hang out, again, it was like kind of all guys really. One of my bigger sisters had a boyfriend who was like massively into metal and all that kind of stuff, and so I would hang around with them. So they, even though we're 3 years apart, we were kind of 5 years apart in school, so I was in first year and they were in fifth year. And I became really, really good friends with one guy, and he was like this amazing guitarist, Mike Homine, like amazing. And he used to wear leather jackets with the tassels, you know, like proper big afro. He was like, I was just like, yes. And he became really, really close. And, you know, Steve Vai and all that, and Joe Satriani, I was like in, totally, totally in. Mm-hmm. But I think because they were so much older and I wasn't allowed to wear band t-shirt, I wasn't allowed to wear Nirvana t-shirt because it said, you know, not very appropriate words on the back, and I was like, it's fine, you know. So yeah, I was, you know, that kind of stuff I was never allowed. And now I see, you know, old band t-shirts made to look old in like H&M and stuff, and I'm like, yes, Nirvana t-shirt, yes, I'm wearing it, yay.
Finally. During all this time then, who was dressing you? Was it your mum having quite a big say in what you were wearing?
Yeah, totally. So we'd go out, you know, do the occult, you know, go to Liverpool, go to John Lewis and Marks and Spencer's and things, and be in the young adults section, essentially. So I don't ever, you know, I can just like remember kind of wearing like suit jackets and things like that. And as I got kind of towards the end of school, then, you know, I remember wearing kind of velvet corduroy jackets, which I loved, you know, and starting to be able to start wearing my own clothes. And I had a wee bit of money because I'd, you know, get pocket money and things like that. So I certainly never felt that I had control of how I looked, just my kind of makeup. I did do a lot with my hair. So I used to dye it an awful lot, and I used to henna it all the time. And I don't remember, there's like spray and mousses that you could get. So you could get like, yes, so I used to be like purple and red streaks in my hair. And then, and they were like wash in, wash out. So you'd like be walking along the street and it would rain and you just get these like purple. I suppose my hair, I was quite adventurous in, but it's quite dark. So my mum was probably like, well, you can't really see the purple and the red, so it's fine. And she, you know, they were just trying to make sure that I was presentable, I suppose. And I think, you know, it's that kind of real, what will people think, rather than what do you think? And that's what I am not passing on to my daughter. You know, if she wants to wear a leopard print onesie and a leather jacket, let's go for it. Do you know what I mean? And a T-Rex sticking out, then, you know, it doesn't matter what people think, it's about you.
Were you ever put in something that you just hated?
I think just the suits, like the suit jackets. I remember going to like university interviews and things and wearing these, oh, god awful suits. And, you know, they were good quality but I just didn't feel like me. I felt so uncomfortable. And so I would kind of put makeup on and stuff and I'd like wear really dark lipstick, and which probably just exacerbated the whole thing. And
no,
I mean,
just to be that age, what, 17, 18, and be in a suit jacket, because that's, I totally see, and I've got so much like empathy with, I see where your mum's coming from, I totally get the thinking behind it, but like, oh, as a teenager, you know. And also we have so much of our life of like conforming and having to wear suits and be deemed to be like professional, and in inverted commas, that having to like speeding that process up and not having the fun teenage bit where you're, you know, tie-dyeing your own stuff and ripping your jeans and doing,
oh god,
all
I would
stuff.
Have loved to do that. That sounds like heaven. Oh, I mean, I used to do so, and you know, my parents are absolutely wonderful, but that, you know, that's, I was one of three, my mum was a lot older, so I think looking back that, you know, there was kind of more to the conflict than kind of just clothes. But you know, my school uniform used to kind of, you know, every, you know, like dirt up and, you know, roll your skirt up as high as possible and, you know, put the small end of your tie out and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I used to love it, but it was like minimal kind of intervention.
Rebellion.
Yeah.
my parents were, I don't know, my mum was quite adventurous. So she was 40 when she had me and my dad was 44. And I remember there being, and I was the youngest only girl, three of us, brothers are much older. And you do get that thing where there's this big generational schism where they're going, well, no, that's not appropriate. And you're like, but everyone else is, you're raising kids in the 70s and, or you know, the 80s, and it's now the 90s and noughties, which is very different. Mm. And it's such a frustrating thing because you can see why they think it's not all right. But you're also like, guys, you've got no idea what's going on. Yeah. And obviously, no, what parent wants to hear that from a 12-year-old? But did you have anything then, a nightmare clothing, that did actually feel like you managed to sneak it past them, that you loved and got to? I loved the velvet. I went through a velvet jacket stage when I was in sixth form as well, from charity shops, and I felt really cool and quite 60s. I used to wear them with some corduroy flares. Thought it absolutely stunk. Every,
I know,
velvet,
I was
going
to say, I can smell
reeks.
It now.
But did you ever find anything that you managed to sort of was a way of maybe sneaking it past your mum, but also feeling like yourself?
My DM boots. Like DM boots were all the way. So, and I've got a pair that are working now, but went through. So I had some Blackwatch tartan ones, some, and then ones that I carried on through to university were fake croc, brown patent croc.
Ooh.
They were beautiful. They used to have red laces in them. And so I had loads of different DMs and, oh, I love them. Love them. I used to paint them and stuff. So I wasn't allowed to put Tippex on them and put band titles on them, but I was allowed to paint Vincent van Gogh's sunflowers on them. So I
wow.
I know, what a knobhead.
But is that's so interesting. Is it because with the DM then, is it, even though it's sort of, to me, it's like iconically linked to music and sort of, you know, like counterculture, but it is still a good, sensible,
practical,
long-lasting shoe.
Yeah. And made in Britain. There you go, Laura.
Yes. Love that.
So
love,
yeah,
that.
I used to put like different laces and things in, like purple and green laces, and then put bits of my laces and things. So that was my kind of like normal. Oh, there she is, party in the feet.
Oh, love that. And also, what, like a gorgeous, subtle act of rebellion of like, painting, you know, just still trying to find your place and tell people who you are with these boots. That's the time to shine. When you were a teenager, obviously you say grunge is a big thing, Nirvana's a big influence. What were the other trends going on? And would you go in for trends, or was your mum like, no, absolutely not?
So it was the kind of the skirt and trouser thing. So like, you know, that was like massive. And
Skort?
Skort, is that what they're called?
Scousers, that's what they wear, scousers. Skort is when it's shorts, yes.
Right, got you. Scousers. I didn't go into that, because I was never into the kind of, like, I wasn't into that kind of music, so I was never into Spice Girly, you know, things. So I kind of looked on those like, oh yeah. So some of my girls, I had a few girlfriends, but my friends were mainly guys. So I had a few girlfriends. I remember Carmel used to wear them all the time, and I did try hers on, and I was like, babes, it's not for me. But yeah, it was definitely the velvet, you know, the kind of velvet thing going on. What else was there? Oh, shell suits. I did have a shell suit.
Oh, really? Talk us through the shell suit.
God, I've not thought about that for years. So that's probably when I was about 10, and it was amazing. And it was, so I was quite boyish, so I didn't want a pink one. I had a blue, it was like blue triangles and white and black. Oh my God, it was gorgeous. I used to wear it all the time when we could, like, we used to do, you know, school play kind of things. I used to wear it all the time. I thought it was like amazing. Everyone's like, you look like a boy. I'm like, yeah, I know. My hair, oh my God. I used to look like Keith Chegwin. So my hair was massive.
Your act of rebellion, is the only way we would have seen it in the flashes of laces and the painted DM boots? Would it have been, otherwise would you have looked like a kid that was just kind of conforming and...
I definitely wore, you know, the satin skirts and that kind of grungy kind of... So I wore a lot of skirts, but black tops, but never anything that looked scruffy. And all I wanted to do was wear big red and white jumpers and bite the ends and have holes. That's all I want. I just wanted holes in my jumper, do you know what I mean? And ironically, that's what I've got now. But, you know, just I kind of... Yeah, I wanted to be someone else, really, I think. Mm-hmm. I wanted to express myself the way I could through music. Not express myself through music, that sounds really pretentious, but you know what I mean? Like, I was just obsessed, like, always had music on, always, you know, I'd had all my CDs, I'd, like, make a triangle and, like, glue tap them to the wall, so I had, like, a whole wall of CDs, and I'd, like, take the album cover out, and I was just, like, obsessed. And I suppose... not being able to reflect that in the way I looked and the way I kind of felt was really kind of, yeah, quite hard work. But again, you don't really feel it at the time. You just feel uncomfortable. You're just like, oh. But looking back, it was a kind of having a bit more freedom to express myself and not worry about what other people think, I think would have been very helpful.
It's so interesting because there's like, music and fashion are so intrinsically linked because one's often influencing the other and vice versa. And like all my like style icons are all musically based. So I just can't imagine that thing of being like a music obsessed teenager that was never allowed to show anyone on the outside that they've got a brain full of music and references and pop culture. It's tough. It's really tough. Yeah,
and, you know, I did have a nice time. You know, it's not like I had a bad childhood, I had a lovely childhood. But yeah, it's the individuality certainly was not there.
Yeah, that is tough. Yeah, I'm not saying like, and what an awful childhood because you didn't get to wear a Nirvana t-shirt.
I know, and I feel really awful. Mum better not be listening to this.
It's just tough being a teenager, isn't it? And then that thing of like, you know, you're right. It's that thing of feeling ill at ease. And it's not to say that if you'd have been in a Nirvana t-shirt that it would have fixed everything anyway. But, you know, it's just it's an interesting thing. So the style that we see you having now, when did that appear then? Because most people, it starts experimenting in school, but it must have come a bit later for you.
A lot later. So I got into... So I was kind of, again, like just thrashing around and I was kind of thinking about some of the outfits I used to go out in as a, like, not even a student, because obviously I'm in uni for 7 years as an architect, and just really kind of gaudy, always legs out, so always dead short skirts, just like dreadful shoes, tights, bright tops, thinking I was fabulous. But looking back, I was like, oh Jesus. And then I kind of found burlesque, and I found that aesthetic and was just totally blown away by it. And then I started doing burlesque. So it was back in kind of 2007. So it was before it was huge. And it was, you know, still when you couldn't tell your, I mean, my mum and dad knew, but, you know, certainly couldn't tell your partner's grandparents. So I started doing belly dances. I moved to Ireland and I started doing belly dances. So I kind of got into that kind of, you know, being expressive. I've always been quite extroverted. I've always loved doing stuff. I always love competing. I love fighting. I love, boxing, not actually just fighting in the street. And used to do downhill mountain biking, things like that. So I've always loved that extroverted side of me. And so kind of finding burlesque and getting into doing that and kind of devising these shows, I love that art and expression and getting your tits out was great. And was really, really good for my self-esteem. But I always did my own makeup. For my wedding, I did my own makeup badly and my own hair. I was always, because I think I've always had really bad skin, I've never liked anyone touching me. I almost can't even touch my own face. I've always, you know, it's always been a real kind of Lady Macbeth syndrome, I think they call it. Just like, when my skin got better after many, many years, omega-3, if anybody's got bad acne and they've tried everything, omega-3, mainline it, stop eating crisps, stop eating sunflower oil and hit the omega-3. That's like the only thing that's sorted me out. Great. Yeah. So I started to feel kind of more comfortable in myself. So I used to do my own makeup and all that kind of stuff. And then I did a nylon shoot. I used to do like nylon modeling. And I had a professional makeup lady come and do my face and my hair. And I was like, oh, this is how you can look with makeup, you know, because I've just done it myself my whole life. And so that was probably like 27, 28. And my hair was all, you know, rolled up and I had this like amazing like peach coloured makeup and she just showed me how to do all the highlights. And it was just an absolute game changer. And I remember that day just thinking, right, I need to sort my image out. And I felt comfortable in these quite tailored clothes. It just felt so right and it's something like clicked into place. And I, you know, I've never been tiny, I've got quite big shoulders, I'm very sporty, and so most clothes just, you know, I've got to have a waist or I've got to have, you know, some kind of neckline, don't expose the boobs because, you know, and suddenly all these kind of things, wearing something that makes you feel comfortable and makes you think, oh, I look fabulous. And that was that kind of 50s style, kind of quite tailored, the pencil suits. And I don't have much of a waist, so kind of, bringing those kind of shapes together. And that was just an absolute game changer for me. So I feel most comfortable in those kind of quite tailored looks where there's, you know, it's quite simple and elegant. It's all about the lines and length as well.
What's interesting is that you've had this like breakthrough when it comes to your image and how you want to dress, for a start from taking your clothes off, but then also when you're sort of saying that you had this sort of like breakthrough whilst modeling, it's such a interesting thing to happen to, because you would think you would have to have your style nailed and really know how you want to present yourself to get to the point of modeling, but it feels like you sort of like stumbled into it and gone, oh yeah, no, what you're doing on me now, that's exactly what, which is so interesting. And my question I usually ask people here now is if they think in hair and makeup as part of their style, but it feels like you were thinking about makeup as part of your style before clothes, even that makeup has been very important, and hair, because you were changing that and, you know, you're getting the winged eyeliner. Is it still as important now, or is it the clothes that come first?
I think I've tried to experiment with makeup and tend to go back to kind of quite neutral but big winged things. And I think I've become so much more confident in what I wear, and I'll see something. And I think I'm having a bit more confidence in my body and my image and, you know, putting something on and it looking awful, and I don't go, oh my god, I'm the worst person in the world, I'm so, you know, I'm too fat here, or this doesn't fit. I go, oh, it doesn't suit me, it's fine, you know. And that's been quite good. And also getting to this age and not wearing inexpensive high street clothes, I think, has been a massive thing, because I'll wear something that's inexpensive and I'll just look dreadful, and I'm like, it's not me that's the problem, and actually I need to wear something that's more tailored, more like suit it, because it just doesn't suit me anymore. And I think I've kind of swapped from feeling awful about myself and then just feeling shit to, oh, it doesn't suit me, it's fine, you know, it's not me that's a problem, it's just we don't go together anymore.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, they thought, why stop there? Why not create other exciting and unexpected combinations, like rainbows and ropes, or fruity and gummy, or chewy and more chewy? That's why they created fun treats like Sweet Tarts Twisted Rainbow Ropes, Gummies Fruity Splits, and Chewy Fusions. When you dare to combine, it's sure to blow your mind. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine. Visit SweetTartsCandy.com to shop now.
When it comes to vintage, because obviously burlesque is said, like, you know, huge nod to reproduction, but vintage as well. Have you got quite a lot of older stuff, secondhand stuff? Have you got an oldest item of clothing?
I've got an amazing kimono from 1910, I think. Wow. Which is absolutely beautiful, and it's got gold kind of threads on it. Oh, it's so gorgeous. Which I kind of wear occasionally, but it's huge. I tried to get it taken up and they were like, it's just impossible. And not taken up, but, you know, kind of so I could wear it.
Altered, yeah.
Yeah, so I need to wear it with a belt, and it's really heavy. It's silk and it's just incredible. And I've got my granddad's old cardi that I like to wear occasionally.
So lovely. That's
and it's
gorgeous.
All holy. Yay!
Finally. Even better. Is there an era that you wish you existed in just for the clothes?
Because I suppose going back to that kind of idea of control and the kind of, it's so interesting that fashion and, you know, that, you know, there's quite a lot of history and sociology in male clothes history, but mainly in women, you know, and that idea of kind of buttons being on the back, so you had to have somebody to dress you and all that kind of stuff, and these, you know, kind of very, very tight hobble skirts. I mean, they're called hobble skirts, do you know what I mean? They're not called freedom, have a lovely day skirts. And I think, so I love that style, but then everything that's associated with how they came about and everything that's associated with, like, what was going on, I just can't. I think now, you know, with people, I think now, you know, the kind of self-expression that people are getting and male fashion becoming really open and really kind of free. It just feels so much freer. I kind of love walking down the road and I have to stop myself from going, you look amazing! Or, oh my God, you look amazing! Oh my God, you look amazing! You know, and it's just so lovely. And that might be a kind of a reflection of how I feel about myself, and I feel kind of freer, and, you know, I could wear a big leopard print coat, or I could wear a big green dress and not mask but like unlearn my kind of, I feel really fat, I feel really great. So kind of trying to go, right, that's in my head. And my husband was a social worker and a mental health social worker, so he's been absolutely incredible in helping me kind of work out these issues and think, you know, and I can go to school or I can go to shops and not have any makeup whatsoever and feel comfortable. Not feel comfortable, but I can do it, you know. And 10 years ago, it would have not even been an option. So so maybe my kind of like, oh, everyone looks amazing, I'm not looking at the going, I could never wear that. Oh my God, they look amazing. I feel so awful. You know, I feel free enough in myself that I can celebrate others. Just the freedom that we have is so wonderful. So I think it has to be now.
That's a lovely answer. It's lovely because also it feels like in celebrating other people, it's leading you to be able to celebrate yourself more. And the fact that you celebrate other people means that you are unlearning the what will people think and judging others But it seems that you're just like, oh, they look great and they seem happy and that's wonderful, which is surely a much nicer place to exist in than that sort of restrictive, what will the neighbours think kind of situation.
Yeah.
Have you got an item of clothing that you put on that you instantly feel wonderful in?
Well, I mean, one that I feel instantly comfortable in, which is my massive, big, grey dressing gown because it's so cold in this house. That I always, well, I tell you what, Kiri, I like a bit of latex.
Love it.
But there's something, I don't know whether you've ever wear a latex skirt, but oh my goodness, there's something amazing about it. It doesn't not suit anyone. It's one of the most, so comfort is a different thing, but you put it on and you're like, shit, it just, it's like the best pair of Spanx you've ever had and it's shiny. It's like amazing.
I love that. This is one of the best answers I've ever had is, what do you pop on and feel great? And you're like, oh, me, a latex pencil skirt. Don't you worry about that. So what's your relationship like with shopping then? Do you want to thrift? Do you know, are you on eBay or is it you actually want to be there and touch it? Like, what is, and is it an enjoyable experience or is it something you sort of have to do?
It is an enjoyable experience. I definitely have to touch it. I don't, very rarely. In fact, I bought a Vivienne Westwood jacket from eBay. And like, weirdly, I'm obsessed with jackets. Now, isn't that weird? I just realised. I'm like always trying to find the best jacket. And I got a really gorgeous one from a vintage shop in a really posh part of London. And it was, there's no made, you know, it was obviously made. And it's got little poppers in it, obviously to have some kind of boa or something in. It's like amazing, but it's just too small for me. So I've like ripped the back seam and I'm like, I've had it mended so many times, but I just love it. And then I always have to wear my hair down to cover the ripped seam, but it's so nice. I love a suit jacket, but harking back to, you know, being a teenager, isn't that weird? It's like maybe like some kind of like self kind of flagellation. Anyway, but I, yeah, definitely have to feel it. I love charity shops. I don't find there's much as good stuff anymore, but maybe that's just for what I'm kind of looking for. I kind of really like those really kind of, you know, 40s, 50s things. Finding something like that is, oh, amazing, but they're kind of like hen's teeth. So I've tended to not shop that much, but I love things like Seamstress of Bloomsbury. So I like vintage style stuff that's been made in a contemporary way. That's what I adore. So I'll buy those online. Never got on with TK Maxx. I've tried and failed. Can never find anything there. Yeah.
You've taken the Lord's name in vain there. Huge TK fan over here. Interesting. I know what you mean about charity shops and that I feel like I've, since they've been sort of, I guess, made more profitable.
Raided.
Yeah, but they do, you know, their Oxfam originals will get in there and, you know, and I think that people have got sort of savvy to getting vintage stuff out. So I think you have to go to real sort of like, I'll say it, shitholes that other people don't go to. And I do mean the North Wales coast that we're from is where you're most likely to find vintage stuff.
Hey, man.
So what's the best thing that you've ever got secondhand then, or thrifted, or, you know, bought secondhand on eBay?
I've definitely seen my kimono, like, it was a joy. And it was like £60.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, it was years ago. And it's just,
where did you
glorious.
Get that from?
It was like a special, it was like a London kimono kind of rehoming service. yeah, kimonos, I'm dreadful. I'll just buy any. My daughter's got a lovely one that my best friend bought from Margate. It's in this like vintage shop in Margate. I love them. And I have a lot of kind of kimono style tops. I find them rather lovely. But then I'm quite conscious that I wouldn't wear them out. So I would wear them as, you know, gowns, you know, around the house and stuff and feel all fabulous and glamorous. And they're super warm. But then that kind of cultural appropriation side of it, it's like, what, you know, so kind of conscious of not, you know, and I wear quite a lot of the kind of the floaty 100 stars, do some really beautiful ones. And I remember Angela Scanlon was kind of talking about cultural appropriation and kimonos, and I was like, "What?" She's like, "No, you're okay." And I'm like, "Oh, you know, it's just you're just like so conscious."
Yeah, and also getting them from the right places, I think, is an important thing, right? It's again, it's who's profiting, and is there permission, and where's the power? It's a really complicated conversation, and I don't always know when I, because I've thought that, but when I bought from always black-owned businesses, but that use like a batik print or what you'd say is like African print, African textiles, that I'm always a bit like, oh, am I... Like, what's the ethics of this when I wear this? And my partner really loves stuff, especially when it's like men's two-piece suits with like an African print. And there's one that he really wants. And he's like, he's got one that he wears in the house. And again, this is, like I say, it's always own, you know, like black-owned businesses that we bought from. But he's like, I would just feel like, I would just feel like it was massive cultural appropriation if I wore it outside the house. And I'm like, it's such a weird thing to like, I'll appropriate, but in secret. But I'm the same, like, I've got these dresses that I just, you know, that I'm sort of very sort of thoughtful about where I wear them. And also the kind of print that I go for tends to be less, it's definitely... You can tell that it's made in that way. And oh my God, there's such... I've got two beautiful dresses and I do wear them out and about and I love them. I feel so good in them. But they are, I think, probably more sort of like... It feels like slightly more Western influence, or probably it's something that the West stole from African design. So it feels a bit more like, oh, is it? Isn't it? And that makes me feel safer for some reason. It's so daft, isn't it? Because it's... Because also I think it's just... accepting that it's a learning process, right? And sometimes you are going to get it wrong, and that's okay. And if you sat there in your house in a kimono, like, getting it wrong has never looked so good, right?
Yeah, and it's a kind of funny one. And I'm making a boiler suit at the moment. I want to make it like a proper boiler suit for chicks or anybody that fits into chick style and size that you can wear to the shops, right? Because like I do a lot of DIY, I do a lot of building work, and all this stuff is just hideous. And I want something that you can take off really easy to wee in, because you can't wee in a boiler suit. And I set up this thing called Siren System, a kind of like a network of designers and artists and architects and all like diverse women. And I've got this beautiful lady who does amazing prints. And once it's done, I'd like a range with her prints as the lining, you know. And just it's that feels totally natural because it's a collaboration, and it's like so kind of like where you kind of pitch stuff, but as you know, thinking about it and how it what are the optics of it.
Yeah. No, do you know what, I think there'll be loads of people who are listening to our like awkward white lady conversation and who have the same feelings as well, of like that thing of wanting to support, you know, businesses from people who are marginalized, but then also being like, but I don't want to be the rich white lady coming in and buying and just appropriating things, and how to be respectful and how to support and facilitate people without being like a white savior. I think the fact that you're talking about it in such an honest way, I think it will resonate with lots of people. I think it's and also that whole, I get that same sort of like slightly garbled, oh, I don't know what I think, and it's so, I'd never feel like I'm on particularly solid ground, because for years and years and decades, we all had assumptions about race, and I think in recent times that we've changed and realised that those assumptions were not based in fact. And I think that maybe means for people who thought about it and, you know, read about it and listened a lot, that like, oh no, we could get it wrong again, but that's a really scary thing, because, you know, yes, people get to learn, but also we've got all the facilities at our fingertips to learn. So what, there is no excuse for getting it wrong. And, you know, it can make you a bit sort of like, it makes me a bit verbally constipated when it comes to talking about these things. But it's only because I'm not excusing myself. See, there's a great example. It's because I care and I want to get it right. It's not because I haven't thought about it. So if anything, I'm thinking about it too much.
Yeah, but we haven't thought about it in, well, not like we as in you and me, but society hasn't thought about it at all. Bringing that through to generations and kind of, you can't care too much.
Yeah.
But if you really do care, then yeah, you get, because you're like, you know, it's, comes from a place of genuine, you know, wanting to do the best for everyone and everything, and yourself and your, you know, little people that are coming after you. Do you know what I mean?
And hopefully, you know, people would look at the body of everything that you do, and that gives it some context, right? But also, no one needs to give me the benefit of the doubt, because I'm a rich white lady and I have got time to educate myself on things.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Talk about the future. So do you see your style sort of evolving, getting more extreme or more, are we going to dress wholly in red? What's the vibe?
I think definitely more extreme, definitely shoes and heels, definitely no comfort on the feet, but yeah, just crazy.
I'm so interested as to why you're like, oh, my ambition for my style as I get older is to never have comfortable feet.
Because I think I love the way high heels look. I love the way they make me feel. I love the way they, you know, look on other women. And it's probably the first thing I look at. I'm like, oh, amazing shoes. Yeah, just love them. But I mean, I'd wear them for like 10 minutes and then take them off. So that would be fine. <when I'm older. laughs> I think an older lady with, do you know what? When I was in primary school, in like infant school, so before you go to primary school, in Prestatyn, and we had this Welsh teacher who used to have snakeskin shoes. And this is probably where it comes from. And they were like real snakeskin. And I remember sitting, she must have thought I was the creepiest thing. And I remember sitting and I used to brush my finger up the heel of a shoe. Yeah, and I must have been like 4 or 5, 6. And I've all, you know, I think an older lady in a beautiful court shoe.
It's so funny that you've just described, you know, like when when Peter Parker gets bitten by the spider, your snakeskin court shoe is like a burlesque dancer being bitten by. It's like your origin story.
I could like flash forward.
Is there an item of clothing you can always see yourself wearing then? Is it always a heel? Is it always a pencil skirt?
Yeah, definitely. Heels and pencil skirts. Massively into coats. I've never really mad into coats. I think it's those kind of things. It's like I would like have half of an outfit but then never know what to wear on a coat, and then discovering leopard. I mean, I've got so many, well, I've only got three, but you know, that I've had for years now. And you know, I thought it was the trench coat and just didn't quite, you know, but a nice big comfy oversized coat, you know, I kind of, all these little things are slotting into place. And I think you're right, you know, not having that experimentation as a kid and not having that kind of confidence in the way I looked and my body and all that kind of stuff, to suddenly be like, yeah, this is, feels comfortable, looks fabulous, throw on a pair of, you know, snakeskin boots and we are rocking it. So all those little bits are kind of coming together. So I think I'm not TV clothes, but I think my kind of general style day to day will get a bit wild and a bit crazy as I just feel more and more comfortable. And it's also getting reactions, you know, you put it out there, you get it back, you know. Somebody yesterday, it was this, I was in Birmingham, and this woman was wearing this amazing green fluffy coat and high heels, and I was just like, you look incredible. She's like, oh, thank you so much, you know. And so you put it out there and you look at people and you smile and you get it back, and people are like, oh, I love this, or like, oh, thank you, you know. So I think it's that kind of validation through positivity rather than, you know, validation through size. So yeah, I think it's all good.
Yeah, or like, yeah, or people being cautionary tales that you shouldn't dress like is a really damaging thing to grow up with as well, I think. I know you can always see yourself in your pencil skirt, but is there an actual thing that you own that you can always see yourself wearing? I obviously want to see you on a mobility scooter and with a latex skirt.
Squeeze it all in there. I probably shouldn't be telling this, but I got a tattoo recently. So I've always wanted one tattoo, and I've always wanted bad motherfucker. So I got it, and one of my friends, an amazing tattoo artist, and I was having a drink. We were in London, and she's like, "Oh, I finished my shift. Somebody's cancelled. Do you want a tattoo?" And I'm like, "Yes." And she's like, "Bad motherfucker." I'm like, "Yeah, baby." So I've got this like really cool, but it's like in my pant line, so you can't see it. You know,
love it.
Yeah. And but my ambition, they're talking about mobility scooter and latex. My ambition is to be, you know, in a care home, being body sponge bathed, and someone going, you know, like picking up my, what's it say, like stretching out, bad mother, oh yes, darling, I used to be a burlesque dancer and an MMA fighter, and they're like, yes, crazy. But yeah, that's, so yeah, I'll probably be that kind of lady, just over the top. Yeah, I'll probably regress. I'll probably, my tits will come out more as I get older. Just stop wearing lingerie in the street and stuff, it'd be amazing.
Are there any trends that you're hoping never come back?
Probably that skirt trouser thing. In that shiny polyester, you know, what do you call it? Scout?
The two-tone, yeah, yeah. The two-tone. Gosh, that was everywhere for a while, wasn't it?
And was that a start of David Beckham? Was that his? Because when he did it, it was like kind of cool. I kind of liked that idea. But then when it came to the high street, it was just awful. You know, don't come close to me with a naked flame kind of material.
Yeah, that was everywhere, wasn't it? In the sort of like early noughties, late 90s, that sort of, lots of weddings as well had those like black and grey two-tone or blue and purple if it's really jazzy. Yeah, that was, everyone just looked like a sort of lenticular picture or a hologram or something. It's,
don't move.
I've got a feeling it's due a comeback, I imagine, oh my with the whole goodness. Sort of like Y2K revival. Let's strap in for the two-tone.
Oh, those shoes, those black court shoes as well, that like the square toe with the piping, kind of estate agents awful. Shoes. Oh, please, never.
They are exactly that. They're exactly that. Final question. Mm-hmm. This could be sad, but it's meant to be uplifting. So what outfit would you choose to be buried in?
Leopard print satin pyjamas, ovs.
Love
but
it.
Thing is, I'd like to be cremated. Mm-hmm. So it's all about the cremation. So I'm going to be, and I've been thinking about this for years. So I want to be scattered, but I want a huge marble angel looking down, crying, and like this, like really, like all day funeral. I want the whole of Mozart's Requiem played. I want, you know, you buy in mourners with black umbrellas. That's what's happening. So the leopard print, and then it's all about the marble and the crying and the rain and the black umbrellas.
Wow. So it's going to look like a My Chemical Romance.
And I want everyone to be in mourning for a long time. Yeah. None of this, like, we want to celebrate. No, I want you to be very, very upset for a very, very long time.
Laura Jane Clark there. What a brilliant woman. Do you know what? A really dear pal of mine also has body dysmorphia. And it is, I mean, it's such a cruelty that in an absolutely image-obsessed world, your brain is convincing you that you're something that you're not. And it's already hard enough to exist in a body and navigate this world, and then to have your brain playing tricks on you like that as well. It's just absolutely brutal. I think this chat is great for so many reasons. And not just honesty in terms of body dysmorphia, but also that battle. Listening back to it, it really spoke to me. The battle of trying to find yourself as a teenager through fashion when you're fighting your family and what they want and expect from you. And it doesn't mean they're not brilliant parents. It doesn't mean that they are mean or, you know, that you know it's all coming from a place where they're just trying to do the best with you. But it's still a juggle with, like I say, what they want from you and what they want for you. And I love that we have Burlesque to thank for her style. What a way to reclaim your style and body. I still don't think I'm going to go for a latex skirt, but I appreciate her making the effort to try and convince me. You know what? I'd find it really hard, actually, to find the right kind of indie business. At first, I was found a really great business I've wanted to talk about for a while that does sort of like shiny, sequiny, burlesque. But I was like, no, it's the like vintage tailoring that has, when I think of Laura Jane Clark, that is what I think of. I think of those like lines and those, that tailoring. So
I'm going to be talking about an indie business that started in East London. It's called Voodoo Vixen, and they just do a beautiful line in vintage-inspired clothing that I feel like it hits the nail on the head of, you know, when it comes to Laura Jane's desire to find vintage styles made with modern fabrics, because let's face it, we don't want to be hand-washing everything forever. But everything is made to last, and the idea behind their pieces are is that you invest in them, not that you know, and you have that forever and ever, and it can be passed on. Because a lot of the time with vintage style things remade in modern fabrics, they're just actually using worse quality fabrics. So we won't have a vintage reproduction of them in however many years' time, because they're not designed to last. But all the clothing is designed in-house in East London still, and is created using a very small supply chain that they have a great, very long-term relationship with. And that means that they can vouch for the safety, the treatment, and the quality of the garments that are being made, and can track them in actual real time from being designed till they're delivered at your door. Now, it's a really interesting thing that so much of vintage, if you think about it, the accoutrements, the flourishes, often come from animals. Things like fur and bone and feathers. But Voodoo Vixen have decided that, like, we can have the look of those things without ever using them. So they have committed to not using real leather, real fur, feathers, and no buttons are ever made from any part of an animal, because so often people don't even realise that that is a thing that is existing on their clothing. And in the case of items that might pass through the business that don't meet their quality controls, or maybe it's faulty, they're either repaired, they're recycled, or they're sold on to third parties. So it's not just sent to landfill. And the suppliers that they work with ensure that any offcuts of the fabric that they use are repurposed so that nothing is wasted. So that is Voodoo Vixen. We'll give you the lines, the cuts, the tailoring of that vintage sort of 40s, 50s. There's even some 60s stuff on there. But in beautiful modern fabrics that are nice to the environment and nice to animals. I really hope you enjoyed that chat with Laura Jane Clark. And I think it's going to mean a lot to a lot of you. If you want to get in contact, you know that you can. You can give us an email on whoyouwearingpod@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on our Instagram, whoyouwearingpod. I'm going to be back next week chatting to a good pal of mine, a fantastic comedian. And, man, she's so good at being deep, charming, funny, and interesting. It's Desiree Birch. You're just going to absolutely love it. I'm so excited for you guys to hear the episode. I will see you back next week.
Who Are You Wearing is produced by Joe Southard, the artwork is by Mary Phillips, and the music is by Annie Glass. This has been a Little Wonder production.